It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
You still like me? Or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Madras, Oregon, population 6,000, is fast becoming a madhouse. Long ago identified as one of the premier places to see the first coast-to-coast U.S. solar eclipse in a century, the city is bracing for 100,000 visitors this weekend.
This is three Super Bowls along with the Winter Olympics coming to Madras.
Nearly all hotels and campsites for miles have been booked for 2 years. Many homeowners are renting out their houses. This one snagged $1,500 a night with a four-night minimum. J.R. Brooks, who's organizing Solar Fest, rented a carrot field to create a makeshift solar town. He'll house 20,000 campers, and for $3,500, he'll rent you half a shipping container.
It's got air conditioning, beds, daily change out, showers, electricity, Wi-Fi, TV, the whole nine yards. And that's the top of the line.
It's all to see the rare solar system dance that occurs when the moon is at its closest to the Earth and sitting perfectly in front of the sun, turning day into night. Everyone in the lower 48 states will see at least a partial eclipse, but a total eclipse will be visible over a 70-mile-wide area that will start on the Oregon coast at 10:17 in the morning and end 93 minutes later at the South Carolina coast. This Californian drove to Idaho to be in the path of totality.
We're going to be here.
Special viewing glasses are a must, and watch out for scams. Retina specialists say unless they're made with ISO 123-122, permanent damage could be done quickly.
Anything more than a second or two really is very risky.
Oregon is expecting 1 million eclipse chasers, clogging roads so badly the governor declared a state of emergency to deploy the National Guard.
For those who missed this total eclipse, the wait for the next one that will cross the entire U.S. won't be nearly as long. August of 2045, or 28 years for the next chance to bark at the moon in the middle of the day.
All right, Sandy Rios, back with you. Hey, interesting, and it's happening today. Have you ever seen a full eclipse? Well, no, you haven't, because the last one over this continent happened in 1918. So probably most of you did not see that. But this is a very interesting day. And while they talk about, you know, traffic and hotel rooms and special glasses and the record numbers of people that will be watching it, et cetera, then one can help but really stop and breathtakingly realize that there is a creator and that the things he set in motion in the space and in time transcend what happens on this little ball exponentially, that there is a God who created all things, that there is order, that he is in control. No human being could pull the moon between the sun by themselves and cause that to happen. No amount of carbon dioxide or whatever, CO2 emissions, nothing. There's nothing that human beings can do to touch what God has set in place. And so, I hope that today, the most important thing that people realize is just the awe and majesty, that they will just shut up and be quiet and understand that there is something much greater than themselves. And by the way, it's great to be back. It's great to be back. I was going to say something else, so I lost my train of thought. I was in Scotland for about 10 days, and I think I told you that before I left. I want to thank Matt Barber and Matt Staver and Fred Jackson for filling in so beautifully, and I just appreciate it so much because I know that you all were in very good hands. And it gave me a chance to go and be with my son and his wife and their now 4 children, because while we were there, the new baby was born. Her name was Lucy Joy, 8 pounds, 2 ounces, precious, healthy little baby girl. So 2 boys and 2 girls now are my grandchildren, and it was just a great time. A great time of perspective. You know, I tried... I was intent on not watching the news. I just needed to be with my family, play games, not think about it. But of course, many things could not escape I couldn't escape it in Scotland. Some of the things that were happening here, and we'll talk about those in just a second. But it was a wonderful time away, and thank you for letting me go and enjoying the host that so ably sat in my place. But now here we are, back in full swing. I had a wonderful time on the plane. Actually, Saturday coming back, I was reading the story of the Von Trapp family. You remember The Sound of Music? Remember that? Beautiful musical. I was reading the story written by Maria Von Trapp, the mother herself. And, of course, she was a committed follower of Christ. She was Catholic, so that some of her theology would not be the theology of evangelicals. But it's obvious to me that she understands. You see, I think God actually forgives a lot of bad theology. Now, that may seem contradictory because I also believe that when during the Reformation people died over such issues, I have great admiration for that, and I think it does matter. But I still think that God, in the wide spectrum of things, wants people who love him, understand the sacrifice that he gave of his only son, love his son, accept him, whatever the murky understanding of the other things surrounding it. And so anyway, Marie talked about a lot of things, and I feel like, you know, God really spoke to me because as I started hearing the news, you know, I started to be really concerned. In fact, you know, the despair isn't as easy to come in. My son actually told me some of the news over the table the last day I was there, and I began to get discouraged, and it affected my mood, and I thought, this is my last day with my family. I don't want it to be ruined by all of the things happening on this earth back in at home. And so it was funny that God would use that book by Maria Von Trapp. And I think one of the things that the family had a number of setbacks, a number of major hurdles. Not only, you know, the fact that they lost everything that they had to fight the Nazis, not meaning literally bearing arms, although two of their sons did, but just the oppression of the Nazis and the almost the force of them to bow the knee and the hard choices they had to make, which were not to bow the knee, and just a lot of things like that. And one of the things that Marie talked about is when it's the things that are bad that happened to them were God's will. And she said, when it's God's will, there is no why. And I think part of the thing that God spoke to me on that plane as I was resting, that long ride was 8 hours, and it took me 4 hours to it's a long journey, let me just say, from St. Andrews to Glasgow. I had to take a bus. It's a very winding bus. It takes a long, long time. And 4 hours at the airport, so it was a very long day. And so as I rested in my seat and I began to pray and just really have time to think and read that book, I just feel like God really spoke to me in a very deep way about not being in despair, that some of these bad, really horrible things that we see unfolding are not outside of the will of God. That I am not saying that we just bow the knee and accept all of this and don't fight back. That is not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that we understand that God has never lost control. He has not lost control now. And the things that are happening are within the purview of what he's allowing. And so with that, there is some peace because we know that he's working toward a final goal, which is not our story. It may be very rough, the path that we're going to take here. I think it's probably going to be. But out of that, God will build men and women of God who, with spines like steel, who love him and serve him. And as I was just reading in the book of Acts before I left, the wonderful, wonderful story of Paul and all the men surrounding him. But Paul, of course, is the star of the book of Acts. And how God took him through so many difficulties, and yet God, Paul became a man, just an uncommon man who loved God and had such power and authority because of his service and his obedience to God. And that's what we have in our future. It's going to be something wonderful because we're going to see God in ways we've never seen him or experienced him before. All right, so back to the news. Why am I on this little sidetrack? Well, because lots is happening. We know that protests are breaking out, and I think protests is really understating it. There's violence and there's anarchy. And there's a direct attempt to undermine and destroy the country. It's been there a long time. I've talked about it, but people don't really necessarily believe until they see it. Many of you saw it in Charlottesville, and maybe you saw it over the weekend in Boston and Dallas and other places. In fact, let's listen to a USA Today story about what happened in Boston just this weekend.
Thousands take to the streets in downtown Boston as far as the eye can see, holding signs advocating against white supremacy, the KKK, and President Trump. This march is in response to another rally being held in the same city on the same day. The free speech rally, organized by the Boston Free Speech Coalition, includes Trump supporters, conservatives, and libertarians. The organization reportedly says it is not a part of any white supremacist group like the ones that took part in the Charlottesville, Virginia rally a week ago. A car plowed through the crowd, killing a woman and injuring dozens. Authorities in Boston say the goal is to make sure the two groups do not come together to avoid conflict. Top government officials on both sides of the aisle also say they will not tolerate extremist unrest in their city.
Well, that's USA Today, which is one of the worst pieces of propaganda in the country right now. You know, USA Today, such a friendly named paper, such a friendly looking paper with some really good articles. Well packaged, you can get it all over the country. If you travel a lot, as I do, you get them in hotel rooms or hotels, that's where people get their news. And of course, the USA Today is doing what all, as I understand it, all of the news media outlets, most of them since I've been gone, have been reporting the event in Charlottesville as just okay with Donald Trump, that he is a white supremacist after all, and he hates Jews, by the way. Remember, we've been told this. Doesn't matter that, remember, he was the first person to allow Jews to attend one of his golf courses, to allow them to play way, way back. He stood out on that. His own son-in-law is Jewish, Jared Kushner. I mean, this stuff is just fabricated, and it's fabricated for a reason. Trump must be painted as a racist, as an anti-Semite. He must be linked together with these white supremacists, of which, you know, I have to say, if you counted the white supremacists, I mean, the truly KKK Nazis in this country, you might come up with, a few hundreds? Not very small amount of people. I don't think that, you know, even in spite of what the SPLC says and in spite of what the press hammers away, I do not believe that we are overrun with white supremacists. And now they're changing their designation to white nationalists. Now, what does that mean exactly? That means maybe people who believe in America, that they love their country, they love its foundings, they love the story, the uniqueness of this country, and they want to preserve it. Could it be? And could it be that you and I now are morphing into the objects of wrath, the white nationalists now, you see? Not KKK, not racists. Not that, but we are white. We happen to be white. Sorry. Many of us happen to be white. So we love our country. So now we're going to be called white nationalists. You see how this works? It's a very dangerous path that we're on. There's no question about it. And of course, Trump's big sin was after Charlottesville. He made the statement that there was blame on both sides. But of course, no, of course, there could not be blame on both sides. There was this march started by, allegedly, and I'm going to get into an article in a second that I'm going to read a lot of it to you that kind of gives you some background. Even, I have to say, while I was in Scotland, a couple of people I discussed this with had it all figured out, you know, white supremacists, and Donald Trump is one of them. And this is what we're allowing in the country, and how dare we, you see, because this is the word they're getting, and this is the word most Americans are getting. And yet I said, but wait a second, you don't know the whole story, you don't understand. You're not hearing everything, but of course, they think they know everything, the world, and at least half of the American people. But when I return, I want to read a story to you that talks about what really may have happened in Charlottesville. It's a great article, so please stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios back with you. It's a pleasure to be back with you. I have to tell you something else. You know, I had that bad biking accident. Remember that? And I have teeth that are not mine and have not been able to have them replaced because the damage was so great. So they broke while I was in Scotland. So if you hear me sounding funny today, I'm trying to manage in the process till I get these fixed. So if I lisp and sound funny, you'll just have to forgive me. All right, I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here for your encouragement and your walk with God. This is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Some people like to brag about having friends in high places, But there is no friendship more enviable than the one Abraham had. According to the Bible, Abraham was a friend of God. What about you? Can you claim friendship with God? Psalm 25 tells us, "The friendship of the Lord is for those who fear Him, and He makes known to them His covenant." Not only is that an amazing promise, it's a hint of the gospel in the Old Testament. And ultimately, this covenant would come through the one who made friends in low places. The king who came to serve, whose death and resurrection ushered in a covenant of grace. And if you know Him, then you are indeed a friend of God. You can get Anchor Devotional delivered in print monthly at getanchor.com.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
I'm always amazed at how quickly we get off track when it comes to our giving. I guess I've been guilty of that myself from time to time. But Proverbs 4:23 says this, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life." Now, the way I understand that is the issues of life that the writer is talking about is pretty much everything that we do. See, if we get off track with our stewardship, with our giving or tithing, it's because of what springs out of our hearts.
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realize is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
Police in Seattle are no longer allowed to call criminals suspects. Instead, the bad guys are supposed to be called community members. Police tell reporters the term is offensive, reeks of political correctness. It's only a matter of time before they start offering the community members spa treatments and farm-to-table dining. Dateline Jacksonville, Florida, a man there in critical condition after he tried to kiss a rattlesnake. Police say the victim had been drinking. An eyewitness tells the police the snake seemed rather calm until the guy made the move to first base. Apparently, no means no, even in the reptile world. Finally, the number one burger chain in the country has been dethroned. California-based In-N-Out is out. Five guys are in. That's according to diners surveyed in the latest Harris poll. In-N-Out now ranked number two in the nation, followed by Shake Shack, Wendy's, and Culver's. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Spectacular to get this many people on very short notice to express opposition to a venal and ugly strain of American politics that comes from the top of the country, Donald Trump.
Well, Tina Fey inspired it. I mean, come on. But I had to put my own spin on it. She wanted to stay home and eat it. I thought I'd come out and share. Seems fair. No violence, no matter what flag you have.
It's really affirming to see so many people united against hatred. And I wouldn't expect anything less from Boston.
Swap, yeah, get out of here.
Come on.
Get what, son?
Come on.
Go.
Go.
No.
Get out. Get out of here. Let's go.
Shame.
Shame.
Shame!
Black Lives Matter!
Black Lives Matter!
Black Lives Matter!
All right, that was a Boston Globe montage of what happened in Boston over the weekend. I have to say to you that I'm confused because of the articles I read about that particular rally. I'm not sure what the counter-protesters were counter-protesting. I didn't see anything about there being any Nazis rallying. And maybe they were, and I just haven't seen it. But I'm just telling you, I don't see that. What I do see is that there was a small group of people rallying to promote free speech. And so this small group of people basically said they're libertarians, conservatives, traditionalists, classical liberals, Trump supporters, or anyone else who enjoys their right to free speech. All of us here, in many ways, are true patriots because in spite of that noise out there, we're here to stand up for something very fundamental, which is called free speech. But thousands of others, fearing that the free speech event would be a platform for neo-Nazis and white nationalists, joined a robust counter-protest. So the handful of free speech protesters, they were just demonstrating for free speech. I mean, then that's bad. You know, that's a terrible thing that you should demonstrate for free speech. They actually had to be escorted out because the counter demonstrators came out in full force. No Nazis, no KK, no fascist USA. They cannot distinguish. If anybody knows Nazi history, anybody know it? Anybody raise your hand. This is what the Nazis did. They shut down their opponents in this very way. Oh, it is just the most bizarre thing. And I think it's because our kids, and now they're not just kids, it's the parents of the kids, don't know history. They don't understand. They don't know what fascism is. They actually are turning against free speech. It's amazing. And so this protest, a free speech demonstration, was scheduled to run from noon to 2, but at 12:50, they had to be escorted away because they were afraid there would be some violence against them because they were protesting. They were rallying for free speech. And one young man, he was reluctant to give his name. He came to support the free speech rally. He said, "I think it's awful that people can't speak out to express opinions." The counter-protesters descended in the commons before the hours before the rally and found flyers showing what. Now listen to this: found flyers showing white supremacist and neo-Nazi symbols. The leaflets, which other counter-protesters appeared to have prepared, urged people to learn to identify these symbols and let anyone displaying them know that they are not welcome in our city. So, in other words, the only presence, it seems to me, of Nazis and fascists, white racist fascists, were prepared by the counter-protesters because the people that were there rallying were rallying for free speech. There was an event in Portland, Eclipse Hate, and they had 1,000 people. And there was a protest in Dallas. Water bottles were thrown at police officers on horseback, and water and what appeared to be urine were sprayed on Confederate supporters. And then you heard in that little Boston Globe prepared piece right there that this comes from the top. It's Trump. Trump's the hater. Trump hates blacks. Trump hates Jews. I mean, it is the most irrational, and that's what's frightening about it. When you watch movies about Nazi Germany and you see how irrational it became, I used to look at that and I thought, how could that be? How could people be so fooled, so enraged, so stoked up to hate things that should not be hated, like Jews, to start to treat them like animals. And now it's turned upside down because the Nazis were absolute masters of propaganda. And the Russians are that too. See, the Russians, the Soviet Union, which is what we've been dealing with the so-called Russia connection, they are masters at playing the double, triple game and a propaganda, so that you never quite know what's true. And it was also true of Vladimir Lenin. By the way, could I recommend on Netflix, there is currently about a 48-minute documentary on the revolution in Russia and how it started, how propaganda was used, how Lenin was so masterful at using disaster to his advantage, of lying about what was really happening. It's just amazing. And so we are being played in a big way by our news media and by the propagandists. And the point that I learned in that video, I had a great time in Scotland, but my fun was when I was alone one night was watching a revolution in Russia. So Something's wrong with me, I think. But I love Russian history. I find it fascinating. I named my daughter Sasha for that reason. I thought a lot, all things Russia were very... It's what I said. I'm surprised I'm not on the list. I'm surprised I'm not one of the Russian conspirators because I really actually have a fascination with Russia. I've spent some time there. And so I must be guilty too. Nevertheless, I digress. One of the things that Lenin learned was that you didn't have to take full power in a country in order to create revolution. You just had to find the weak points, the choke points. And so if he just identified a key railroad intersection and was able to mobilize his few people and take that over and choke it out, and maybe he was able to take over one newspaper or one news outlet, a telegraph office, whatever, he found that if he found key choke points, key avenues, he didn't have to have the army. He didn't have to have all the people. In fact, the Russian people didn't want a revolution. They didn't want their czar and their czarina murdered brutally and lined up and their children shot to death and burned with acid. They weren't really in favor of that, but that's what they got. But they were manipulated, and they had enough people that they manipulated that they stirred up such violence that, you know, they just, they prevailed. And that's what I see. That's what happened in Venezuela. You know, half the people in Venezuela didn't want Hugo Chavez or Maduro, and they've been marching in the streets. They've been starving. They've been punished. They've lost their jobs. And many of us thought, well, good will prevail, right? The good people will prevail. But no, they are not prevailing. They are experiencing what the people of Cuba experienced, violence, punishment, starvation, deprivation. Either bend your knee, bow your will, or suffer. And so they're not winning in Venezuela. The opposition is not winning. And I say that not to depress you. I just say that to say that Satan is the prince of this world. And before the end comes, before Jesus returns, the prince of this world is going to run rampant over good, especially Christians and Jews. We will be the object of wrath. We will be martyred. And we know that's where it's headed. We do know that, right? You knew that when you became biblically literate. You understood the full story. But the full story is also the coming of the Lord Jesus as a warrior. On a horse, and the end of all this, the setting it all right, the justice that will be restored, the peace that will be brought, and that's why we look to him, and that's our ultimate hope. Well, I want to read this article to you that is, I think, really insightful about Charlottesville. As I watched it from afar, it was hard to know what was happening, and then as I began to get bits and pieces from people that I trust, people closer to the scene, you know, the media was quick to label it, and so we didn't know. We just watched what they said, and how else could we think about it? And even if we thought, you know, something's not quite right here. Well, now more things have come out. It's been, what, a week? I'm not sure of the day, honestly, because I was gone. But the Charlottesville riot, this is what Conservative HQ has written. Was the Charlottesville riot a setup? The riot in Charlottesville, Virginia, that took the life of Heather Heyer has some strange coincidences, along with lapses and provocations on the part of Charlottesville and Virginia state officials, that make one wonder if the whole affair wasn't designed to result in a violent clash that not only could be laid at the feet of President Trump, but would spark violence across the country, which it did. The first item worth noting in this tragedy is that the organizer, Jason Kessler, appears to be an equal opportunity provocateur. Now, Jason Kessler is the one who organized the rally, the supposed neo-Nazi KKK, we hate blacks, we hate Jews rally. Jason Kessler was the organizer. Prior to the election of President Trump, Kessler was not associated with the alt-right. He was, in fact, an Obama supporter. He was associated with the violent left and Occupy Wall Street movement. There was a close association, by the way, between the Occupy Wall Street movement, the violent anarchists of the Black Bloc that featured so prominently in Charlottesville, and the Black Lives Matter organizations. All share the same funders, including Nazi collaborator George Soros and Democracy Alliance, and all have a well-known penchant for violence and also have close associations with the Democratic Party. So now let's see. Jason Kessler, the organizer of this rally, that was supposedly KKK, neo-Nazis. He's the organizer. Oops, he voted for Obama. He was an Obama supporter, and he was involved in the Occupy Wall Street movement, which was part of the Obama left attempt to completely alter this country, to destroy capitalism, I guess, would be the if you'd synthesize it. So Jason Kessler suddenly has a change of heart. Now he's a neo-Nazi and hates blacks, right? So that's what we're supposed to believe. The second point worth noting is the strange actions of the Charlottesville city officials, especially Mayor Mike Signer, who once advocated an electoral college coup against President-elect Donald Trump, and documented anti-white racist Vice Mayor Wes Bellamy. So you've got Mayor Mike Singer of Charlottesville, who was the mayor that advocated an electoral college coup against Trump. And then you have the Vice Mayor, Wes Bellamy, who was a documented anti-white racist. When Jason Kessler applied for a permit to hold his so-called Unite the Right rally at the Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville, it was treated in a fairly businesslike manner, although city officials did try to force a move to a larger park. Kessler went to court, and on the night before the rally, U.S. District Court Judge Glenn Conrad held the rally could go forward at the Lee statue. The stumbling block to holding the rally at the Lee statue was allegedly Vice Mayor Wes Bellamy. Bellamy's authority to cancel the permit is unclear, but his actions allegedly prompted Kessler and the American Civil Liberties Union to scramble to federal court to get the permit reinstated. It should be noted that Bellamy was forced to step down from the Virginia Board of Education after his racist tweets attacking white people surfaced. During and after the presidential campaign, Bellamy has issued virulent and hateful statements about President Trump and his supporters, most recently claiming, contrary to all evidence, that President Trump is the leader of white supremacists. So this is the vice mayor of Charlottesville. What's more, in issuing his order allowing the rally to be held at the Lee statue, U.S. District Judge Glenn Conrad noted that the city did not try at the same time to move counter-protesters to another location. Clearly, city officials wanted the violent, riot-prone, anarchist protesters downtown at the Lee statue. But things got even stranger on the day of the riot. As the crowd built and tensions mounted and assaults by the Black Bloc anarchists rose, the city and state police did nothing to enforce Virginia's anti-masking law. Then it goes into the code, Virginia Code, and talks about that you can't wear something on your face. Unmasking laws, when enforced, have proved to be exceptionally effective deterrents to violence by Antifa thugs. For example, at Auburn University in Alabama, where police enforced Alabama's anti-masking law, ripping off masks and in some cases arresting masked Antifa thugs. It is bizarre, not to say extremely suspicious, that Virginia's Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe and Charlottesville City officials Mayor Mike Signer, also a rabid anti-Trump activist, and Vice Mayor Wes Bellamy and Police Chief Al Thomas had this tool that could have been used as necessary against both sides in the riot and did not use it. It was almost as if they wanted masked thugs to be running wild in their city center. The final and most bizarre evidence of a setup was the police stand-down order issued as the riot broke out. Fox News reporter Doug McElway was in attendance during Saturday's deadly events in Charlottesville, where he reported that the police were called off as soon as things started turning violent. But when the tear gas started to fly, thrown by protesters, the police themselves began to evacuate then. I asked the guy who was in charge, "Where were you going?" "We're leaving. It's too dangerous." They had a chance to nip this thing in the bud, and they chose not to, reported McElway. Friends at Zero Hedge reported that the ACLU confirmed that Charlottesville police were ordered to stand down, which allowed the KKK and Antifa to meet face-to-face with no interference. Congressman Steve Smith of Georgia put it so well in a tweet, "Mayor who wanted electoral college coup against Trump allowed Antifa and KKK to walk right into each other, no police." Knowing the Antifa thugs were there with cans filled with cement, baseball bats, and even improvised flamethrowers, why would police stand down? All right, so that's most of the article. It's called "Was the Charlottesville Riot a Setup?" It's a conservative HQ. We'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can read more of it and just see what you think. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Then Elisha prayed and said, "O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see." My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. One morning, Elisha's young servant went out first thing and saw the Syrian army surrounding Elisha's hometown. The servant was racked with fear and cried out to Elisha, "What will we do?" Elisha said, "Don't be afraid. There are more with us than are with them." Then Elisha prayed, "Lord, open this young man's eyes." The servant then saw the mountain full of horses and chariots of fire. As opposition mounts in our lives, fear not. The Lord who is in us and with us is greater than the hostility present in the world.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, "In God We Trust." You can do your part and display your faith with an "In God We Trust" car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program. I encourage you to listen as we work verse by verse through the scriptures each Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. Join me as we explore the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk radio program, Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I know the first time I ever went to Israel, you land there in Tel Aviv, you get off the plane, you get out on the bus, you start driving through the plains of Sharon outside of Tel Aviv, and you just pinch yourself and you just say, am I really here? Am I really in the Holy Land, the land of the Bible? Or was this just a fairy tale I read about as a child? No. It's a real place. The Bible is true historically and, as we know, spiritually. So if you want to join us on this trip to the place where you pinch yourself, we're going in March 8th through the 16th. All the information is available at the website twholyland.com. twholyland.com. If you want a free brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES. 800-FAMILIES. Option 5.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. For the second time in 2 months, a cargo ship has taken out a U.S. Navy vessel, vitally needed to project power in international waters claimed by China. Worse yet, this is the fourth damaging incident this year, involving Pacific-based warships, three of them equipped to shoot down ballistic missiles at the very moment that North Korea is increasingly threatening to fire such weapons at American territory. Our Navy has become so small that, given our dependence on freedom of the seas for commerce and security, having any of our ships taken offline is worrying. Whether the result of intentional, hostile action by others or failures on the part of the warship's crews, the practical effect is the same. Our capabilities are diminished while our enemies are emboldened and, perhaps, inspired to neutralize additional U.S. naval assets by accident. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, I was just asking the guys during the break if anyone had opened the phone lines for you to talk about these Charlottesville or Boston or any of the demonstrations over the weekend. And I think not. So I mean, it's not, we don't have much time. We have this last segment, but let's talk. 888-589-8840. Maybe some of you were there. I don't know. I would love to hear your comments or your thoughts, questions, if I can answer any of them. It's 888-589-8840. What have you seen? What are you hearing? What are your concerns? And I want to give you, while I'm waiting for the phones to ring here, I want to give you some good news. This is good news to me. In Alabama, there was a runoff race between the establishment candidate, in which Mitch McConnell had spent, I think it was $8 million they were putting into the Senate race there to make sure that Luther Strange was the winner of that runoff election, but he didn't win. Mo Brooks, who is currently in Congress, was the choice of many conservatives, while Justice Roy Moore was obviously the choice of a lot more conservatives in Alabama. In fact, Justice Roy Moore prevailed in that race. He won 60 of 67 counties. He was outspent 25-1 between Luther Strange and McConnell's allies. And so with very little money, Justice Roy Moore, former Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, won that race. I think it was 39% of the vote that he got. And, of course, Luther Strange. And it was amazing to me. Mo Brooks really didn't. I don't see the numbers in front of me. I thought I had them. But I know that Justice Moore won 39%. Luther Strange, I think, won, I don't know, maybe 30%. He was down by like 9 points or so behind Justice Chief Justice Moore. And then Mo Brooks was down really low. I was surprised, actually, because I thought it would be closer than that. But here's what happens next. There's a runoff on September the 26th in the Alabama race. And so if you're wondering what you can do, you might want to get involved in that Alabama Senate race. By helping, by working, by supporting the candidate of your choice, whatever you can do. You know, it doesn't have to be the senator from your state that you may not have a choice. But if there's a candidate in another state that you support, this is a good time to do it. And, of course, there's a lot more for me to say, but I do want to go to the phone lines and have a chance to talk with you. Let's go to Missouri and talk to David. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Sandy. I'm definitely not in favor of any kind of these the Confederate memorials being taken down, but I do have a very objective view looking back 500 years, and what's happening is called iconoclasty, and this has been a feature of Whig Protestantism, and you know, I'm not a co-religionist of yourself, but your church fathers destroyed my church father's statues, and it was done merciless.
Who are your church fathers? Is it Catholic you're talking about?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Or like the saints? So, okay.
Well, I'm sorry?
You're talking about the saints. Statues of the saints then were torn down. And Mary.
All the churches were in the Northern Europe, all the churches were iconoclasted. All our memorials were destroyed.
Yes, I was just in St. Andrews. I know that. That's true. In fact, I would just the church that John Knox preached in that was burned down was right next to my son's home. So, yep, I know what you're talking about. So your point, David?
Well, my point is what's happening now is being done legally through elected officials and votes in these town councils to remove these statues. My point is, it's a feature of Protestantism, and within it is the progressiveness of it. So the iconoclasty, it's a 500-year-old tradition of liberalism. And when I say liberalism, I mean in the big term liberalism, of which Protestantism is. And so I don't believe in iconoclasting, but it's just the reality it's just the nature of America or Protestantism is to remove the last generation's memorials.
Okay, David, I hear what you're saying. I just can't see the connection here because it's certainly not a rampaging group of Protestants going around rioting right now. I just think that, you know, when you talk about Antifa and Black Lives Matter, their banner is not the cross. So I don't guess I see the correlation. I do get the general comparison. I would say, you know, remember the Taliban, and certainly when we think of erasing the past and past history, the Islamic conquerors, the Ottoman Empire, removing any sign of the cross, chiseling it out of the Hagia Sophia, the huge Protestant church in Istanbul. Yes, it's been done before, but I don't believe that what we're seeing here is a move of any kind of religious fervor whatsoever. And beyond that, the comparison, I just don't think there's any comparison other than other things are being removed as they were removed by Protestants during the Reformation. But those things were driven by deep religious passion, and this stuff, I think, is being driven by just anarchy. But interesting observation. Edward in Indiana. Good morning, Edward.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I'd like to point out just a plain numbers game with regards to Antifa and the neo-Nazis. Now, I think a lot of people are aware that neo-Nazis and the Klan, they've been protesting and having public rallies for decades. I mean, I think that the Klan tries to hit at least every state once a year. And how much violence do we usually see at a typical Klan rally or a typical neo-Nazi rally? None. Actually, this is the first one since I can remember in my lifetime, the first one that I'm aware of since the Greenboro Massacre back in the 70s. And their ideology is an evil ideology, but they don't go around picking fights with people. Now, Antifa, they do, regardless of whether or not they're right-wing people or not. I mean, they go through and they tear up and destroy towns. So, really, here, not ideologically speaking, but, you know, just by works, who are the violent ones? Who are the violent ones, generally speaking? I guess that's my whole point in calling this morning.
Yeah, no, well, there's no question that the violent ones, at least in the last few decades, you're absolutely right. I know there was a KKK march in Skokie, Illinois. Skokie is a suburb of Chicago, and it's a highly concentrated Jewish population. And they marched through the streets, and the authorities let them march. And there was absolutely no violence. Now, look, I'm not saying that to brag on the Nazis. I'm not saying that. And that's not what you're saying either. But we have to make that clear because people are irrational right now. It's not that. But this is what a society that allows free speech. This is what we allow. We allow people to speak their mind. It's the violence that we have to stop. And unless someone's speech is creating violence, which some would say that there might be a point with the KKK and under those rules where their language is causing all kinds of violence, then perhaps you have to reconsider, like shouting fire in a theater. But for the most part, we give each other space. We are a tolerant society in spite of what the left says. But Antifa has no tolerance. You're right. And they are out for anarchy, revolution, destruction. Please understand, all of you listening to me, that this is the template for revolutionaries. It has been for decades. It is to destroy and undermine. It's like Rahm Emanuel quoted, you know, Saul Alinsky, never waste a good crisis. Wait for bad things to happen, whether it's a natural disaster, a union strike, or people are hungry, and go in and rub the sore raw. Rub it, make people feel it's worse. Stoke the flames of racism, turn whites against blacks. Never mind that we had found ourselves, I think, in a place of peace and enjoyment. I'll just speak for myself. Yeah, how would I know how everybody feels? I just know that race relations had come a very long way since when I was a girl. And leave it to the left, leave it to the anarchists, leave it to those people that want to destroy our country, to get in there and poke at that sore and stir it up and make it bleed and to teach a whole new generation hatred in a brand new, fresh way. This is what they're doing because they want trouble, because they want to take power. They want to destroy this nation. And so far, I think they're doing a really good job. Edward, thank you very much. Shirley in Tennessee. Good morning, Shirley.
Good morning. Just two quick points. You know, I found it very interesting as I read Ezekiel chapter 8. About the people who were in the sun worship, and then I looked around today and saw people running after this eclipse anyway. But as far as the Black Lives Matter and all of these violent protests, people have to examine themselves. If they are really a Christian, their whole job in this life is to help people get saved, not help people get beat. Black Lives Matter talks about Black Lives Matter, but they won't ever show up. All these people who are other than black, because the majority of them are, and they'll never show up to abortion clinics where most blacks are killed and protest. They say that's rhetoric. No, that's the truth. And if they won't stand for the whole truth, they stand for none of it. They don't belong to God. People are aligning themselves right now with who they serve, Christ or the Antichrist. There are plenty of people getting the mark of the beast. I believe the microchips in them. And what's interesting is they're all playing into the game of the political elite Illuminatiists who want depopulation. And the best way to get it is by getting one side against the other, having everybody fight and cause wars. Yep. We're seeing it in everywhere.
Yep. Yeah, Shirley. Yeah, well said. And I'm only going to move quickly because I need to get to some other calls. But well said, as always. Thank you. Let's go to Richard in Tennessee. Richard, quickly if you can.
Yes, ma'am. When I started hearing the details of what happened in Charlotte, it seemed kind of strange that the police did absolutely nothing. And then all this violence happened, and all of a sudden it's all laid at the feet of Donald Trump. And I don't get how they can do that. I mean, it just seems so bizarre to me.
But Richard, it doesn't have to be true. Propaganda is masterfully crafted, and it's crafted in such a way that people actually start to believe it. Sometimes, you know, was it Marx who said, if you tell a lie often enough, it becomes the truth. And so, yes, your instincts are right. You know, you know what's right and wrong, and you go, wait, how can that? That's not logical. But if every media outlet is repeating it, and if newspaper is writing it, and USA Today is shouting it from the housetops, and people start believing it, and they start repeating it to each other, and that's how it happens. Thanks for calling. I wish we had more time. Let's go to Lynn in Georgia. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you? And I'll be real brief. I'm a Christian. I have grandchildren, and I worry about the state of this nation. And I wonder whether or not the politicians that for the sake of an election and the news media for the sake of a news story realize what they're doing. I hear the talk in the South, and, you know, it's we're on a very dangerous ledge fixing to step off into either race war or even a civil war. And Nancy Pelosi, CNN, they are responsible for creating all of this hate and turmoil in this nation. And I just wonder, does anyone actually call them out? I mean, is there any way that they realize the responsibility that they have taken on?
Oh, Lynn, they understand fully what they're doing. The Democratic Party has been taken over. I've been saying this now for a couple of decades. This is not a fight between Republicans and Democrats. This is a fight between people who love this country and people who hate it. And the people that hate it have taken over the Democratic Party. And their purposes is to destroy and remake this country in a new image. Barack Obama was all about that, the new America. And they hate the foundings. They hate our history. And they will do anything. If you don't think they don't know that they're lying and that they are creating a false narrative, people are expendable. When you get in this kind of a battle, people's lives, people's fortunes are expendable. As long as you know, you're part of the elite few who are not going to be touched by it, you don't think. And so, yes, they know exactly what they're doing. Don't think for a minute that they don't. I want to say one last thing, Lynn. Thanks for calling. I want to say one last thing. We have elections coming up in 2018. And I think that if you ever, ever were going to get involved in an election, this might be the time. Primaries in your own state and other states. I'll try to do my best to bring you information, but don't just rely on me. Let's find good people and let's support them and see if there's something that we could do to turn this thing around. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.